sometimes they have to kill us. They have to kill us. Because they can't break our spirit.
We choose directly who we are. We know the difference between the reality of freedom and the illusion of freedom. There's a way to live with Earth and a way not to live with Earth. We choose the way of Earth. It's about power.
Friends, this is your co-host, Will Blue Otter. Join us now to learn how to legally worship using indigenous earth-based healing and empowering ceremonies. Aho. As Blue Otter, seventh great-grandson of Old Tassel, first beloved man of the Cherokee, I'm remembering what Old Tassel said to the prevailing culture. Many proposals have been made to us to adopt your laws, your religion, your manners, and your customs. We have done so. Now it is time for our cultures to accept Old Tassel's ways and assisting us to walk in harmony with Mother Earth and Father Sky. Aho.
Grandfather, teach me the ways of the old, so that I may remember who I am.
Aho, and good evening, everybody. This is Will Blue Otter, and our special guest once again is Dr. Carl Johan Kalimann. And we're privileged once again to sit at the master's feet. This guy is no, I'm not kidding. No, you've done a lot, Dr. Kalimann, and you can laugh all you want. We respect you. it's a treat. You've got a fine, incisive mind, and we love delving into it, and of course, the ever-present Mark is with us, and so he's got a lot of wisdom to dispense also. And there's his totem sound. Anyway, fellows, what's been happening since the last time we spoke with you, Dr. Kalimann?
Well, I think when we spoke in, was it August or something like that?
Uh-huh.
And I'm writing on a new book. That's sort of what preoccupies me at this moment. And so I, you know, when you get into these kind of books, it's like somebody's almost telling you that there is a book that wants to be written, and it's an adventure because you don't really know how it's going to turn out. It's a strange feeling, this, that it is the book that wants to be written.
Uh-huh.
And then you have to follow along and as well as you can, so to speak, and do the research that that fits the book. And the book is so it's been a fascinating adventure for myself. I'm a little bit more than halfway through, and so I guess before the end of the year it will be ready. And it's about the Mayan calendar, or the Mayan calendar is there as some kind of a background information. But I'm really, this time, it feels like the book wants to be a little bit broader, and I'm emphasizing that you know, there are certain aspects of the Mayan cosmology that really are part of an ancient collective consciousness, you might say, many of these cosmological traits were shared by peoples in many different parts of the world. And I'm really making that point across, because some people, they really can't assimilate it if you say that, oh, this is just Mayan, or it just comes from the Maya. But there is, you know, what comes through, though, is that there are certain things that did only come from the Maya. What I'm referring to here is the fact that there were peoples all over the world that looked upon like a 9-level cosmology. They had there was a view that somehow there were 9 levels, you know, just to take one immediate Native American source are the Hopi, whose creation story they said that the Creator created 9 universes. And if I go to my own ancestors, the Vikings, they talked about 9 different worlds, and they were all connected to the tree of life, but there was the levels. There was the world of the humans. There was the world of the giants. There was the world of the light elves, and there was the world of the dark elves. But regardless, there were 9 worlds. And then, if you go to, you know, ancient China, they would all build their pagodas in 9 levels, like the Mayan built their most important pyramids in 9 levels, and there were also 9 dragons in the Chinese tradition, and I've been, you know, exploring certain aspects of the Mayan cosmology with the 9 levels of creation, that how they would manifest in many parts of the world, but they were not identical. But certainly, this idea that there were 9 levels or 9 dragons, or that's something that seems to have been quite universal. For some reason, I think it has to do with a geographical location, actually. But for some reason, the Maya were the only people that really developed this calendar system that was based on these 9 levels. And that is a remarkable thing, because what I'm doing here in the current book, as well as I've done in the past with previous books, is to really try to verify that this kind of a cosmology of 9 levels is true. We can verify it, but we can only verify it based on the calendrical knowledge that the Maya brought, and it comes back. This is a part of knowledge that the Maya contributed, that really no other people on the planet contributed, so I'm working on a new book, and it feels like a strong book, and it's coming. You know, it all comes back to this thing that as of 2011, the 9th level, the 9th wave of creation was activated, and that's something that I'm sure over time people will actually start to feel this more strongly, this particular wave. And now some people are doing it, and I am doing it, and it's a fascinating thing, because these creation waves previously, their wave periods have been so long that it hasn't really been felt immediately meaningful for people to follow them. You know, they, you know, like a baktun is almost 400 years, and that's way outside of a human lifetime. But now we are in a wave, then the ninth wave, where the wave period is 36 days, 18 days of a peak, followed by 18 days of a valley. And I believe that for those that are now committing themselves, or not necessarily committing themselves, but they're seeking what we call unity consciousness or oneness, sort of bringing us back to an original unity that existed in the world more than 5,000 years ago. And for us, I'm sure that this ninth wave of 36 days is and will become a synchronizing tool that's not like anything else that people have followed in the past in terms of calendars. So this is a sort of a short summary of what I'm looking at this moment and what I'm working at.
Are you settled on a title for your book that we can publicize?
No. It's too early. I know it will come out with the Inner Traditions. They decide the title, and
right.
It's not ready for that yet. But it will be a book that also takes in this idea that's been increasingly accepted, I think, in recent years of a holographic universe and taking knowledge from quantum physics as well, and sort of putting the Mayan calendar in a new framework by sort of looking at the waves, especially as waves, and once you look upon them as waves with certain frequencies, it suddenly becomes something that you can integrate in the scientific framework of quantum physics, because we're working with waves, and that's really what that is about. No, it's I don't know exactly it will come out. I expect it probably to take a year or something like that from the present time, but I'm working on it at this moment.
Right. Well, Mark, you got any thoughts?
Well, yeah, it's the thing about the nine is right around, I mean, the Hopi have it. If you go down to South America, the Koji also have it, because they're...
Oh, really?
Their men's hut, if you look at their men's hut, it will have... Actually, they put all their hammocks and stuff in there, and that particular hut is kind of a ceremonial hut. It actually has nine levels, and they also have nine worlds in their story.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So you might want to look at the Koji, too, because they have... the same thing. You also see it if you look in some of the symbolism, like if you look at the over in the Indian, whatever, in that area, Himalayas or whatever, the Sri Yantra Mandala, that is actually made out of nine triangles.
Could you repeat that, please?
The Sri Yantra, S-R-I, and then Yantra, mandala.
Yeah, yeah.
It's considered the mother mandala of all.
Oh, yeah?
And it actually is built out of nine interlocking triangles, five facing one way and four facing the other way.
Yeah, yeah.
So there's the nine again right there. And if you look at a lot of symbolism, even look at a compass or a the medicine wheel itself, it'll have four directions, but then it'll have four points in the middle, northwest,
yeah,
southwest, all that. And then
yeah,
the center would be
yeah,
nine.
Yeah.
So you'll find that that nine number is going to be seen in as world cycles or levels or also just as points on a geometry.
Mm-hmm.
So
yeah,
they're going to... going to be a lot of things connecting into it, and the thing you were talking about, the holographic nature, that is actually a very significant aspect of the not just the Mayan Vulcan, but it actually the numbers themselves, the dot bar notation. It is a symbolic numbering system that yields itself to fractal holographic nature. In
yeah,
other words, if you took in Mayan dot bar and you took, let's say, let me think, what the number 17, okay, it'll have two dots over three bars, right?
Yes.
So that would give you a 17. Now, depending on how you interpret the space between the two dots and the three bars, if you interpret the space as taking the two dots up a level, then it would be a 40 plus 15, it'd be a 55 instead of a 17. So
mm-hmm,
if you look at a 55 and a 17, they will be composed of exactly the same set of symbols. It's only the spacing or the interpretation of the amount of space between the second and the bottom level, the 20s and the 1s, that would actually delineate which of those two numbers you're thinking about.
Mm-hmm.
But they're composed, so the dot bar notation itself yields itself into a fractal holographic nature. And the Zulcan itself will do the same thing. So yeah, that's a very that is a very important characteristic of the Zulcan that's not real well known. You can actually you could actually subdivide the Zulcan. So you could take a Zulcan, any cycle of it, and let's say take the whole thing, and you could
mm-hmm,
make it into a day. So one part of the day would be the first day, the first one I miss, and then the last one would be third. So you could actually put a Zulcan onto it, holographically onto a day, or fractally down onto a day, onto a week, on whatever actually cycle of time. You could actually divide it up that way. And
mm-hmm,
so in a sense, each day or each kin contains the whole Zulcan. So that part you're saying about the holographic nature is actually very important. It's also
mm-hmm,
seen when you look at the Hunab-Ku symbol or in a pyramid. It's seen in terms of Hunab-Ku has the two spirals that form it, same, like a yin-yang.
Mm-hmm.
One will be one form of light, and the other one will be the counterbalancing form of photonic torsion, whatever frequency you want to call it. And so just like a laser, when you take a laser and you take it and you make a hologram, you take and you split the beam into
mm-hmm,
two lights, and those
yeah,
two lights come together and form an interference pattern, which is your holographic nature. So you have to have two lights and moving in different directions, but they come from one laser. Now what's the property of the laser? It's unified, coherent light. So all the photons and all the stuff in the laser are doing the same thing. They're all
yep,
dancing together, singing the same song. Well, you can apply that concept to the Hunab-Ku and to the Zulcan itself. And then when you do that, there's a lot of new things come out of that, and you can apply it like to the Sri Yantra mandala, actually all mandalas, all medicine wheels. You can do the same thing. If you take them and you spin it clockwise versus counterclockwise, there's your two rotations or spins or like your two lights. So that aspect of whenever you're looking at these things, you always look for both and how they come together, and when they come together, they create the balance or the zero point. Mm-hmm. And that's going to couple in, that's going to tie in with your nine levels, and then your holographic nature of reality, and all those things will actually start all fitting together. So there's a few ideas for you that might
very
be useful for your book, maybe.
Maybe, yeah. No,
and
it's
that's
very
interesting. And what you're talking about, think about unity consciousness. What
yeah.
that really is that's where the one light and the other light, and instead of the word light, you could use consciousness as the awareness moving with the light, then the unity consciousness is going to be where those two come into balance.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And that's essentially what we're trying to do. Essentially, what unity consciousness does is it takes us back to Creator. It connects us, plugs us right into Creator.
Mm-hmm.
That is
yes.
ultimately what all the guys that, if they dug a little bit deeper,
mm-hmm.
that's where the free energy in this energy technology leads to. Because I remember a few years ago, I was sitting there thinking, I was wondering about like Tesla and all these people that done all this work, right?
Mm-hmm.
And
mm-hmm.
I was doing a dangerous thing. I was getting curious, and I was saying, well, you know, I have a feeling there's more to this than just oil and money. You know, there's something else.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know what it is, but I just had a feeling, you know, it's a little nagging feeling.
Yeah.
Well, Spirit came in and says, okay, Mark, what if you had something the size of a football or a loaf of bread, and it powered your house? And Mark's
yeah.
giving a big thumbs up, right? I'm going, yeah, great. No, not just your house, your car, and your neighbor's house, and their cars, and
mm-hmm.
and it goes on and on. I'm sitting there, whoa, you know. But I was missing the point. So the Spirit came in and said, I said, yeah, this would be great. And I said, Spirit said, well, wouldn't you wonder how it worked? I said, well, yeah, I'm a pretty curious person. I would probably wonder how the damn thing worked. It wasn't.
Yeah.
I said, that's where the problem is. Once someone saw a device like this and started wondering, they are one step away from pulling away the device and plugging themselves in. They're that
uh-huh.
close.
And yeah,
when
yeah.
you do that, you basically are creating unity consciousness.
Yes, I agree. Yeah.
And that's when all hell breaks loose, because then you don't need anything. You don't need power. You don't need
mm-hmm.
food. You basically
yeah.
can probably do just about anything.
Yeah.
What Blue Otter's friend called traveling without a suitcase, that also becomes possible real quick.
Yeah.
So what does
yeah.
that do? What is that? Then I realized, well, it's not just about selling oil and all this other stuff. It's about everything. They
mm-hmm.
lose everything. In other words, people that have that kind of access and plug into Creator, every possible control point over them just disappeared.
Yeah.
It's gone. And that's
yeah.
that's I believe that's where we're headed. That's what we're working towards. And that's part of what Blue Otter and I talk about a lot of times on the show is, you know, how to get people to form their own connection to Creator.
Yes.
Bring that
yes.
and make that happen. And because if that happens, and with each person that does it, it makes it easier for other people to do it.
Oh, absolutely. Yes, it
yeah.
does.
So I suspect there's probably pieces or a large part of this idea is probably in your book or working its way in there.
Well, maybe so. Maybe you're now inspiring me to go into these matters. But it's very interesting things you're saying. And I think you said it, that unity consciousness is really like a unity consciousness with a Creator. And I think that's how, you know, once you get to that, that means that pretty much everything becomes accessible, and that's what I think we're going towards. But it's an interesting you're saying when people get in, people that are into free energy and so forth, that they may actually come to that through this kind of unity consciousness, and
yeah.
it's I think this true accessibility of the Ninth Wave, it only came 5 years ago, almost to this day, and we're just beginning. It's a path that we're starting to go into, and seeing that everything is connected with everything else, and I think all of us, in our own ways, we're going more and more into that, seeing that everything is connected to everything else. And it's amazing. You're coming with these great feedback ideas that are just sort of just connected. Again, it just comes, the whole thing, and everything is connected to everything else. And where that ends up, I don't know. But I think ultimately, when people, we will really feel it, feel this very, very deeply in ourselves, that when peace comes, it hasn't come yet, but to the extent that people are downloading this and finding their own ways of downloading this unity consciousness, we will be walking towards peace and world in balance.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, that's the key. One thing that really does it too is the moment people start hearing about the concept, and they start getting curious.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. That's a way of spreading it, so to speak. It's, and then people have to find for themselves, though. I think that is always important, that, you know, I think we're moving away from the idea that somebody is having a teaching that everybody else should follow or something like that. We can spread the knowledge that there is a unity consciousness that is now accessible, but people will have to find their own ways, and that's, otherwise it won't be anything exciting for everyone to do. But now there is.
So you said you're about roughly halfway in your book right now?
Yeah, a little bit more than that, I would say. Yes.
Uh-huh.
Yes. And its starting point is something that I brought up in a previous book of mine called The Purposeful Universe, which really presents an alternative model for the evolution of the universe, largely, and the evolution of biological species, what that is a finding that was made in about 10 years ago, that there is a central axis was discovered in the universe that have existed from as far back as we could ever see, namely basically to the Big Bang, and what I said already in that book in The Purposeful Universe that was published in 2009 is that science have now caught up with the ancient traditions and found what is the tree of life, what the ancient peoples would talk about as the tree of life, and that discovery, I think that's a key discovery, because the ancient people, the ancient Maya at least, to them it was absolutely clear that their calendar system and the cycles that they followed emanated from the tree of life, And this is a very fascinating story. It's not out there. It was discovered, as I said, when they sent out a new satellite to see if at if the what they call the background microwave radiation from the Big Bang, whether that had any kind of anomalies or if it was totally homogeneous. And they had expected when they did this investigation that there would not be anything, any structure in this earliest radiation emanating from the Big Bang. But then they found that, and this is they found it, and they decided to call this central axis of the universe the axis of evil. And the reason they called it the axis of evil, and I'm now talking about the modern scientists, the those that do all the measurements of to try to you know, determine what the universe is made of, and so forth. They called it the axis of evil because that axis that they had discovered, it completely broke down the theoretical basis of modern physics. And then, so after a while, nothing happened. There were a couple of people studying this, and it indicated that yes, the universe revolves a kind of around an axis. Anyway, then they sent up a new satellite called the Planck satellite, and which had at least 10 times higher resolution than the earlier satellite. And so they wanted to see, could there be some kind of instrumental error or something like that that indicated that there was a kind of an axis throughout the universe from its very beginning. And the new satellite found exactly the same axis. So they verified the existence of an axis throughout the universe from its very beginning. And then came last year. Now, this was 2011, I think, when the Planck satellite verified that there was an axis in the universe from the beginning. And then came another study, which was last year. It's about 1 year ago, 2014. And that was the biggest simulation they've ever done, computer simulation of how the universe has changed from the Big Bang until the present time. And what they found then was that, again, at the early point, they found something they called the cosmic tree of life, or a cosmic tree, I think it was the word that this group of scientists at the MIT found. And so there's now been three different highly, you know, this is sort of big science with you know, with very qualified mainstream scientists taking part of it. They repeated it in three different studies. It all comes out with the conclusion that from the very beginning of the universe, 16 billion years ago, there was some kind of an axis, some kind of a tree of life. And to me, these are enormously important discoveries, and it can't be denied at this point. But it's certainly not something that people have heard about. And to me, it's just enormously important, because that's how these findings of modern physics, of an original tree in the universe, is what allows us to really connect to what the ancient peoples looked upon, that the universe was organized around a tree of life, as they called it. And we talked about earlier how all over the world you find the number nine, but you know, it's even more widespread in the ancient or the indigenous traditions of the world, the concept of a tree of life. And what's stopping this is not really the data. The data is there. The modern measurements verifying that the universe had an axis from the very beginning. What's stopping is that this doesn't fit into the cosmologies that modern scientists are overall working with, and so the information is not getting out to people. It's sort of a cover up, but it's not a full cover up. But it's a cover up of the implications of finding that from the very universe, from the beginning of the universe, there was a tree of life. And so what I'm working on in this particular book is to connect this tree of life with the different waves of creation, and to let people to, I think what is coming forth at this time, it's a little bit slowly, but it is really a new way of bringing together the kind of cosmology that the ancient peoples intuitively sense was true, and the actual measurements of through satellite and other ways that modern science is now providing, and that unification I think is really sort of the will ultimately, it will take some time, but ultimately that's the worldview of the future. So that's something that is very much part of this book, and I think the tree of life concept is a very it's very useful and fascinating, but it's something that like so many other things, people for a long time has just thought about, oh, this is some kind of a myth or some kind of a fantasy or whatever ancient people had, but it isn't. It's a reality, and the ancients had their way of accessing knowledge about this tree of life, and now it's getting. We have the chance to see that this is a real thing. It's there. It's in the universe. And it plays a tremendous role also to this very day in our daily lives. It's the very source of the Mayan calendar system, if nothing else, but many, many, many more things as well.
That's astounding.
Well, yeah, they... You know, probably you know, if you think about the tree, right? So
yeah.
So it's interesting to think. You know, why did they use a tree? Because you know, you look at you got the top of the tree, right? And then on the other end, you got the bottom of the tree, and they're very different. And one is roots.
Yeah.
And then the top, where the leaves are, that's where it pulls in processes of light, and then in between them you got a trunk. So you got it's kind of the back to the two things again, where you got one thing happening on one end, one thing happening on the other, and so things moving through the other. And I've actually seen, you know, stuff that talks about how the some of the trees and stuff, just the way they bring up their sap, is essentially an anti-gravity process.
Not just trees,
other plants too, maybe, but yeah. So there's actually quite a bit of information in that symbology of a tree.
Yeah, and it's also it's kind of strange that trees exist in a sense, right? Why do they grow upwards? Why do the plants grow upwards like a big axis, so to speak? Why don't they grow on the just long horizontally? But it's probably, as you're saying, it's something anti-gravity in them. That's why they grow upwards. They didn't have to grow upwards. They could just sort of grow on the ground, but they don't.
Sometimes those people use something like that, and they there may be a lot more to it than layers and layers of possibilities of what they're trying to communicate with just something as simple as a tree.
Yeah.
And, you know, when you think of a tree, you think of the color green. Years back, I was talking with an Orthodox rabbi and lives about 30 miles west of Jerusalem. And he told me that the stories that have come down was that the first act of Creator when he created the universe was that he shone a green light.
Green light.
So it would have had to come from some sort of axis, and about every synagogue you go into, there is a representation of the Tree of Life.
Yeah.
Oh, really? Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Well, you have the same thing, Blue Water, too. The green, if you look in the Mayan tradition, the green is very important because it's in the center of the medicine wheel, so it would be the axis again.
Yep, and
yeah.
Islam, you know, all of their flags all have the green color. This looks like a leaf, color of the leaf of a tree, so it's very important to them also.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, well, you know, the Maya in their burial sites in the cemeteries, you know, they put crosses, but the crosses are not just sort of the Christian crosses that the priests would like them to be, but they are painted green, and quite often they hang these branches from the ceiba tree on the crosses. So what that is telling us is that to the Maya, the cross also is the tree of life, and what they're putting up there in their cemeteries are these trees of life where we come from, and I think there's a lot of indications that they believe that that's where we return as well.
Yep.
Well, I think one of the biggest shocks I ever had was when I was looking at some of the old representations from Sumeria, and it was pretty obvious that their representation of the Tree of Life was a spiral helix.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
Yeah, that would, well, if you look at your trees and your plants and stuff, and you looked at them from the top down, as they move and put out their branches, they will put those out in a certain spiral helix pattern.
Yep, and that's what the ghost dance is all about too, and you know, dancing counterclockwise.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, right. I guess in the Sundance.
Robert Three Eagles should probably tell some stuff about this too.
Well, what he told me was that the Hopi, the Cherokee, and the Aztec all dance counterclockwise, and we've always believed that dancing clockwise was not the way. You know, even to the point where I might have considered dancing clockwise to be witchcraft. But you know, that having been said, Three Eagles is kind of autodidact, you know, self-taught in physics. And he said the way Wovoka described the ghost dance, he says, if you were to center the ghost dance on a small hill, even if the center was a foot higher than the outer part of the dancers in the spiral, he says it would send an impulse of energy up into the universe.
Mm-hmm.
How that works, I don't know. That was just the comment of somebody that had studied physics.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Some of the Hopi talk about when we move into the next world cycle, in some of their things, they actually say we'll be moving the other way. We will be moving clockwise instead of counterclockwise. So if you listen to their stories, when they say some stuff like, their ceremony stop. Well, they would have to, if certain things happened, they would have to stop it and change their current patterns because things might be rotating the other way and there might
exactly.
be other changes, but they may have to compensate basically their ceremonial calendar because it might be off. So they'd have to stop their ceremonies and recalibrate.
And it would,
that's
would
probably
change,
what they're going to do.
Right. And a change of the direction of the rotation of the Earth would change the way energy
yeah.
flows and rather than, the a direction, it may possibly account for all the prophecies about the way we plant crops and there won't be any weeds and thorns and thistles and the so-called curse will be taken off of the earth, and apparently it would change everything. But
think it affects our awareness and consciousness if we did that. Some of them believe that when we go through this change, that it will actually be positive. It's kind of like what you're saying about the plants and all that, but that's also true of us. We have a tendency to have more problems moving in this direction than the other one. So they tend to think we'll just, when we make that change, it'll just naturally make us better.
Well, yeah, the Jews have got a concept what they call Dvekus or Dvekut, depending on what form of Hebrew. But they believe that emotion, whether it's turning or rocking or maybe we ought to take a look at what the whirling dervish is. I'm not sure which way they spin,
yep.
but maybe
mm-hmm.
maybe these indigenous people, knowing that eventually we're going to be spinning counterclockwise, intentionally are doing this because they know it's going to help them to cleave to Creator, enter an altered state of some sort. Who knows?
Yeah. Well, if you look at this, if you look at the sunstone, the glyphs on the sunstone are moving in a counterclockwise.
What sunstone? The Aztec
thing they call the Aztec sunstone.
Yeah. Okay.
There's a lot of different names for it, but that's
yeah.
one most people are familiar. But the glyphs are actually moving in a counterclockwise direction.
Yeah, you mean the sulking glyphs there?
Yeah, the 20 glyphs.
Yeah. They are going counterclockwise, right?
Right. That's the same way they dance. But
yeah.
if you look very closely on that stone, on the outer ring, on the outer edges, are two serpents. And one's going clockwise, and the other one's going counterclockwise. And if you
uh-huh.
pay real close attention to their headdresses and the rest of the sunstone, it'll give you a little hint about what's coming in the, as they change from one sun to the next sun. The headdresses of those serpents, in conjunction with other parts on the sunstone itself, actually gives a prophecy.
Uh-huh, yeah.
But it's moving counterclockwise right now. But the Hopi believe we'll be moving. Actually, they believe, some of them say, we'll be reversing and we'll be going clockwise.
Yeah.
So I would not be surprised at some point in time when they get to a certain point in time when they stop their ceremonies and they restart their ceremonies, they might be dancing clockwise then.
How about the sun dance in among the Lakota people? Is that clockwise or counterclockwise?
I'm not real sure. I don't remember which way they're
going.
Oh,
okay. Yeah.
I don't know. You know, Otter, which way they're going on that?
I don't know. I know they attach themselves to a central tree.
Yeah.
And the tree has to be harvested in a certain place and brought down from the mountains every year, and of course they're pierced even down into the muscle tissue above their breasts, and they have to tear themselves away from, you know, they keep pulling away until they tear themselves away from that, but there's your tree.
Yeah, it's their central thing, axis.
Oh, right.
Maya actually have that too. They have a tree pole dance thing too. It's done a little bit different, but it's sort of, in a way, sort of very similar. That would be something maybe in Europe too. There might be a bunch of axis tree dances around the world.
Yeah, the European maypole dance.
Maypole dance, right.
Yep.
The voladores in Mexico,
right.
It's also a wild, it's amazing. I wonder who came up with that idea, but I've seen it live, and it's just very, very impressive how that's done. And that's sort of it's the tree of life, and how the tree of life gives the four directions, and then I think they're supposed to turn 13 rounds around this before they hit the ground. I wouldn't want to do that myself. Anyone has seen it on a film or live, or it takes a lot of courage, I would say. But it's a symbol, obviously, honoring the organization of the universe around a central axis and moving down in cycles, cycles emanating in 13 steps emanating from the central axis of the universe.
Well, I believe the Torah believers believe that there's 11 curtains between us, and there's some argument, you know, whether there's 12 or 13 dimensions. I think Dr. Michio Kaku said that they've got the math worked out for 12 dimensions. Well, there might be 13. So, there's all kinds of stuff.
And they may not be fixed, and they might, dimensions might be like anything else. They might grow. They might sprout some new dimensions.
Yeah.
Science kind of likes to keep everything in a box, all neat and tidy, and you know, universe and creation just doesn't work quite that way.
Yeah.
But so the nine comes up too. Oh, go ahead.
Oh, that's okay. That's all right. I just had a thought. I'll keep it. Don't want to interrupt your train of thought. Go ahead.
Oh. No, well, I didn't want to interrupt here. Well, the nine comes up too in the Mayan tradition with the nine underworlds in the Bolan Tiku. Whole thing, because that's you have the nine, and then you have the other one, which is the 13. So there you go. 9 and 13 is 22, which is also gets back to your 11, because you'd have 11 and 11, the same thing as 9 and 13. So depending on how people viewed. Delineation point, 9-13 or 11-11 or 12 and whatever, that might be something that might show up in a lot of cultures too, in terms of you have kind of two sets of levels with a middle level somewhere, which is kind of us.
Mm-hmm.
I think that concept shows up in a lot of cultures too, and that usually that's connected. Can connect back to the world tree.
Wow. Dr. Kellerman, do you do much traveling these days?
No, I don't. I'm hardly traveling at all, especially since I'm writing so I'm here in New Mexico working.
Good place to be.
It's a good place to be, and it has a lot of native roots and that I feel connected to, and it's a beautiful area as well. I hope to be traveling maybe in a year from now or something like that, not at this point. I do want to mention here that, you know, in the ninth wave wave movement, we are shifting from today, which is the last day in a downturn, in a night, as I usually call them, which is today, and then tomorrow begins a new upturn of 18 days. What that should mean is that tomorrow we're entering a period of 18 days where people will have, whoever is working with projects that are sort of aligned with the unity consciousness, they will have their wind on their back for the next 18 days. Then, of course, comes a downturn again, because it doesn't end. This is a wave that goes on up and down. But and for those, you know, on my website, there are the links from my blog to the sites on the internet where you can follow this wave movement, and there is also the link. You can download a calculator where you can see all the time where you are in this particular wave movement, and it's something that I recommend. I feel confident that over time humanity will be synchronized with this wave in the same way as we've been synchronized with the other waves, the lower waves on the nine-level pyramid, so to speak. But anyway, I just want to for people to know that, and if they go to my website, kalaman.com, they can find the links to actually go into this wave. It's sort of a it's a tool, actually. It's a tool for us to align ourselves with this destiny wave of the future. Because part of why the number nine is important, and the ancients would talk about these nine-level cosmologies in different ways, is that it's a completion. It doesn't go beyond that. You know, there's a reason that our numbering system, it just goes up to nine. We only have nine digit numbers. And then, of course, comes number 10. But then you start a new count, so to speak, with another number added. And the way the ancient developed this kind of a numbering system that we have, which is actually 5,000 years old and can be tracked all the way back to the Indus Valley in India, it's that they looked upon the number nine as the number of completion. The ninth wave is the completion of the climb of a Mayan pyramid or a Chinese pagoda, whatever you like. And so since it's the completing level that's now been activated, it means that to follow that is really part of of manifesting the destiny of humanity, what we ultimately are meant to develop and become, which is really this kind of unity with all that is. And so I'm mentioning that for people who wants to start following this this wave, because to feel the reality of it, to realize from in your own personal life that this wave is real, that means aligning yourself with the completing wave of the or this creation that we're in. And if you my website, as I said, is kalleman.com, kalleman.com. And for those that want to get more involved or want to have questions or exactly how to align themselves with this wave, there is a way of sending an email there to me and I can connect people further. But it just so happened that we decided on this particular date for a discussion among us. It just happens to be now it's shifting, so there is a new energy coming in for another 18 days, and it's a good opportunity for anyone who wants to explore this as a way of aligning themselves with the unity consciousness. It's something that will be going on for forever, you might say, but it's a tool at this point to see where you are yourself in this process.
Outstanding. Well, we want to encourage everybody to do that. I know a lot of people are waking up. This has been going on for a long time.
Yeah.
And some of my oldest friends are getting involved with this. Want to encourage everybody within the sound of our voices to get with it and try to get connected to Creator. Well, Dr.
Yeah.
Kalleman, we appreciate you appearing on the program, and hope we'll get together soon and keep us posted on what's going on in your life.
Yes, yes. Yeah, I love your program. I think you have a very good intention and direction for your program.
Well, yeah, I know Mark is a wealth of information, you know, needless to say, getting two heads like you guys together and bouncing things
yeah.
off of each other, you inspire each other, and
that's right.
Well, thanks a lot. Appreciate you, and we'll see
Thank
everybody
you so
next,
much.
Next week, same time, same channel.
Yes.
All right.
Okay.
Well,
okay,
thanks
guys.
A lot. Good night,
Take
Mark.
Take care.
Thanks a lot, folks. Good
Bye.
Night now.
Join us to learn how to legally worship using indigenous earth-based healing and empowering ceremonies. Friends, this is your co-host, Will Bluewater. Join us now to learn how to legally worship using indigenous earth-based healing and empowering ceremonies. Aho.
Wane washien, a te no makia yo mia nam pene, a te na mechi ho o mia nam pene yo wan. A shenya che.
As Blue Water, seventh great-grandson of Old Tassel, first beloved man of the Cherokee, I'm remembering what Old Tassel said to the prevailing culture. Many proposals have been made to us to adopt your laws, your religion, your manners, and your customs. We have done so. Now it is time for our cultures to accept Old Tassel's ways and assisting us to walk in harmony with Mother Earth and Father Sky. Aho. Thank you.
Remember who I am.